Hello, one and all, and welcome to the 247th episode of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast. Coming to y'all live on March 11th, 2024, a Monday. Ryan Holtz, it's your favorite time of year, daylight saving. You tired? You liking this?
I'm tired because I have a puppy. It might have been brought up. And have you ever laced food in your life?
Yeah.
Because like once you've laced food, you can't really go back. Even if it's for a good cause and you're lacing it with positive things, you are still performing the psychological act of tricking another living being into consuming something they don't want to consume by putting it in something that they trust.
So, point of order, is that process that you were describing, is that roofying, or does Rufalin the drug have to be involved for it to officially be roofying?
I feel like Rufalin has to be involved. I feel okay. Like lacing is the broader term. But yeah, no, Mochi had a rough weekend. He got some vaccines that he did not have a good reaction to and had to go to urgent care. And apparently just Benadryl is the solution. They just shoot him up with Benadryl and that helps. And then they were like, all right, well, for the next 2 days, you're going to have to give him a dose of Benadryl every 8 hours. And I was like, he doesn't like pills. And they're like, okay, give him the children's version. Well, no, he'll literally like lick the peanut butter off the pill and then leaves the pill.
Oh, my guy.
Because he doesn't eat big treats, you know, like he wouldn't just eat it whole. That's how you get away with it normally, is you coat it and then he just wolfs it down. But he doesn't do that with treats. He only does that with his kibble because I think he trusts it. And they were like, okay, give him children's Benadryl, which is like liquid form, and put it in a syringe and shoot it down his throat. And we're like, okay, we've done that before and it works. And I did that in the middle of the night at 11:30 because it's every 8 hours, which is awkward. And he started like kind of making this weird coughing, gagging noise. And I was like, what's going on with that? That's weird. And he did it for about 30 to 45 minutes. And I was like, maybe he just hated it. Oh, well. And then the next morning we did it again and he started making the same exact fucking noise for like longer this time. And so I called urgent care and I was like, yo, this Benadryl ain't working for him. He's clearly got an issue. And she's like, no, it's not Benadryl. He just has an irritated esophagus from the nausea from the vomiting the previous day. And I was like, but we give it to him. Within 5 minutes, he's making this noise. Like, it feels like pretty obvious. Like, is it possible that Benadryl is irritating his esophagus? Like, that feels like it would make more sense.
Well, so, he probably has an irritated esophagus that the Benadryl is irritating.
Right. Perfect. So it's like, I don't want to keep giving him this thing that's causing him discomfort.
Right.
So then it's like, all right, time to do the old fashioned. Let's crush up some Benadryl and sprinkle it on his food. And he knows, like, he looks at you and he's like, he licks it a little and he's like, and he kind of backs off. And I'm like, oh shit, he's not going to get fooled this time. But then he like can't help himself. He's like, I mean, it's food. Like, I'm not going to turn down food. And he just starts like eating it cautiously. And then when he's done, he kind of like, he's like, that shit sucked. Like, why did I eat that? But he's now done that twice in a row. But it does wake him up. Like, when I give it to him in the middle of the night, he's definitely like aware because he's eating just pure bitter medicine. That'll get you up and going in the middle of the night. So then it takes a bit to settle him down. So yeah, no, I'm just tired. Not because of that.
Okay.
But because of daylight savings, because daylight savings is blameless. It is a perfect, perfect system. And I refuse any leap forward slander because leap forward is the best time of the year.
It is. It was light until like 6:30 last night. Incredible. Who'd have thought? What a concept.
Yeah. So much time for activities.
Speaking of activities, Andrew Clark is currently getting back to his central Wisconsin roots. Andrew, what's that like?
My central Wisconsin.
Yeah, where's Madison, if not central Wisconsin?
It's southern Wisconsin. It's in the southern third.
Okay.
Like,
but it's like dead in the middle of the state. Like, isn't Berlin a little towards the east? Is this just me?
No, it's pretty central. I mean,
I'm pulling it up on the maps.
Yeah.
Pulling it up.
Fox Valley is the middle of Wisconsin, and I will not hear anything else.
It's clearly a little to the east. That is not... Madison is pretty dead center. It's southern Wisconsin, but it's the actual center of the state.
I mean...
It's the center longitudinally, right? Or is it latitudinally? Latitudinally. And Berlin is more center longitudinally.
I mean, Stephen's point seems to be like bullseye dead center.
I feel like we're like kind of forgetting how far north Wisconsin goes.
Right.
Like we're looking at
Stephen's point.
Stephen's point, I still feel like might even be a little too far south. Like Wisconsin goes north, north. It's just that the top 25% of it is all one giant forest that nobody lives in.
Yeah.
That's why I say Madison Central is because like, it's in the southern part of the state, but it is kind of in the middle of the part where people live.
If you look at a heat map and like redistribute Wisconsin that way evenly, Madison would be in the middle. You are correct there. But geographically, like we're not talking about like the Electoral College. We're talking about land, baby.
Mm-hmm.
We're in Republican mindset now.
Republican town.
Yeah.
Republicans
like,
can vote.
Yeah.
The geographic center of Wisconsin is up for debate. The city of Pittsville is considered the ceremonial center of Wisconsin thanks to a proclamation by Governor Cole in 1952. But the true geographic center, based on several publications, is actually closer to Auburndale, Wisconsin. To make matters more complicated, the geographic center will be different depending upon the boundary used. If the legal boundary of the state is used, which includes portions of Lake Michigan and Superior, the center is actually much further to the east, specifically northeast of Junction City and Portage County. Given the complexities involved, perhaps it's best to let the people of Pittsville claim their fine city. What? No, fuck you.
What?
Fuck you, Pittsville.
Don't enable them. Oh, Auburndale is like just west of Stevens Point. So,
yeah. So Stevens Point's like probably a 5-minute
drive. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
it's basically the center.
The real center that we all care about. Yeah, dude. Look up Pittsville. That shit's to the west. Like, I don't know why they chose Pittsville.
Just eyeballing it, it's not.
It is notably to the west. Oh well, Governor Cole, fuck you. The Cole family has done irrevocable. Oof. Wow, I just don't even care anymore. Damaged to Wisconsin.
When's that podcast? When are we desperate for content that we start ranking Wisconsin governors?
I don't know many. I know. Oh, I think we lost Andrew for a second there. I think Andrew said something, but we can't hear you, Andrew. I know Bob La Follette. I know Bob Doyle, couple Bobs back in the day. I know Scott Walker, and I know Tony Evers. I might have. Oh, Tommy Thompson. Duh. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. That's the list.
I'm trying to see if I recognize. Yeah, no, I don't recognize a lot of these, even from living in Madison, Wisconsin for 4 years, where theoretically memorials or plaques to these people should exist.
Academic buildings named after them.
Yeah, no.
Nope. Yeah, no. Plaques or memorials to fucking governors. Come on. We have exactly one governor who is worth anything in the like broader political sphere, and it's Bob La Follette. Like every other governor is forgettable, and it doesn't matter.
I'm on the Wikipedia page, and I'm trying to make sense of the color coding. Red and blue.
They have tier lists.
Republican and Democrat, those are the tiers.
Yeah.
But then they also got some green and gold in there, and I'm trying to figure out.
Was that like the Progressive Party and stuff? Like, I think Bob La Follette was a Republican at some points, but also ran like under a Progressive Party ticket. Like,
in office, personal details. Okay, so it's political party Republican, but Whig! Gold is the Whig Party.
The classic Whig Party.
And then green is
Is it the Progressive Party? It's my only guess.
Military service.
This Wikipedia page is wild.
Yeah.
Did not need to know this much information about Wisconsin governors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just Progressive Party. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Fighting
figured
Bob.
it out.
Fighting
Yeah.
Bob, you're the only one that matters. I think he was racist. I know. Fucking sucks.
Andrew, you're yeah. No, I'm sorry, bud.
Yeah, I think you gotta go to your mic, your audio settings. I see you. I see that you're talking.
Yes, yeah.
Andrew is currently giving a mime performance to us.
I imagine he can hear us, which makes it all the more frustrating.
Dude, he's got thoughts and opinions. I just said Fightin' Bob is racist, and Andrew is like, hold the fucking phone, man. I'm Fightin' Bob still got shooters out here. I'm going to stick up for this man. Nope, Andrew doesn't.
No.
He's not willing to stand up for that man.
He's not going to bed. He's not shooting for Bob.
I mean, look, it's the early 1900s. There's not many people that are universally chill, like, just kind of nailed it in every way. He was very pro-worker and pro-Wisconsin idea. Like, we gotta give as much kudos as we can in
Andrew,
this world.
Her chat, I think people from that era were a safe bet to be racist.
Yeah.
Hey, what did the... I'm Lucas DeRuyter, and I want to know, Andrew, how did you troubleshoot that? IT master over here.
So I went to my microphone settings, and there are two, again, you guys heard me at the beginning, right?
Yes.
Yeah, for a while.
I did not change the settings. There are two identical microphone inputs, and I just clicked the other one.
Ah.
I don't know how it got switched over to the one that apparently is fake. There's a fake microphone input.
Fake mic. Classic. You fell for the fake mic scam? Mm-hmm. Like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Welcome to 2024, buddy. Buckle up.
What an absolute bozo fell for the fucking fake mic scam.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, dude. Zoom's been pulling that for 5 years now. What do you think?
Next, you're going to run to a hole painted on the side of a mountain.
Yeah. Next, you're going to give $50,000 in a box to a random SUV and just walk away.
What?
Do you not see that shit, dude?
No, what?
Did you see that shit, Lucas?
What are we talking about?
Someone posted an article about like how she got scammed, like, and she was like, I didn't think I was someone who could fall for scams, and then it happened to me, and she described it blow for blow, and it was basically like, your identity has been compromised, we are the FBI,
that's right,
like, give us like your assets are about to be frozen. Give us your living expenses required for the next 2 years, and we'll put it in like an FBI facility and give you a check for $50,000 that you can use in the meantime. That she just took $50,000 out of her checking account, put it in a box, and then an SUV with an FBI agent showed up, and they said, don't look at him, like, your identity thief people are already like watching you and everything, like, just put it in the back of the SUV and walk away calmly. And then they drove away, and like, they were like, don't talk to your husband, you never know, he might be in on it. And like,
oh my god.
Yeah, I know. And she's like, it could happen to anyone because it happened to me. And everyone's like, no, that couldn't have happened to me, I'm sorry, like,
what,
there's no shot that could have fucking happened to me.
At no point did she think, boy, it's weird. It's weird that I have to give the FBI cash.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that's exactly the strangest part to me. A cashier's check has to be untraceable monies.
Yeah, not a wire transfer. Not a check. Not, I mean, again, it's the, if they're saying they're freezing her assets, they could take it out. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to think she put it in like a fucking legal box, like one of those kind that's really dusty that she got out of the basement and had to put together herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then just loaded it up with hundos.
Yeah. Listen, I know you never have to give it to them, but credit to these thieves for avoiding wire transfer fraud, which is That's a big boy crime still.
They figured I mean, impersonating the FBI is a big boy crime.
Well, you know.
No, they got her hook, line, and sinker. It was definitely not like a, you know, fucking rando scam from India where like you click on a link and it gives you a phone number to Microsoft.
Someone
tech
targeted
support.
Her and put some effort into this.
There was a lot of effort put into it. They were stalking her and like there was look, I feel for her. Like it's a she is a victim, but like she wrote it from this weird perspective of like because
I'm
it happened to me,
yeah,
I'm like smarter than a lot of people, so that means it could have happened to anyone. And people were like, okay, look,
this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard somebody do.
Like we're like, okay, and then people looked into her and they're like, oh yeah, she's a nepo baby, like I get it's a, yeah, there's just a little bit of street smarts that might be a little lacking there, like she grew up with money and didn't really quite understand
herself.
This was the person who like could withdraw 50k from their who could withdraw 50 grand from a checking account period
and not have the bank be like, yo,
yeah, she didn't have to come in once a week for 5 weeks or whatever.
The bank was like, yep, you're our premium member, here you go.
I worked at a bank in high school and I'm trying to remember like
how much cash you had on hand.
Okay, so within any of the teller boxes, it's
could
usually...
you get in trouble for this, first of all? Or no? Is that
no,
fine?
No, okay. This is just me talking about a work experience. Like this is
I'm just making sure
it's
this isn't like confidential.
No, it's I'm only telling you this because it's very legal to say. It's totally legal to tell you that the code for the safe deposit box in the Berlin Farmers and Merchants Bank is
oh boy, you're naming names,
dropping
no.
Name. No, this is all information that is just like, hey, this is in the new hire packet that anyone can have. It's not confident. And it might have changed because this was more than a decade ago.
Oh, it definitely
ago
changed. 100% changed. Yeah. All of this is irrelevant.
Yeah, banks aren't even there anymore, probably. Yeah.
If you're looking to rob this bank, like all of this won't help you.
How long Lucas sent you?
My bank teller job in Minecraft. which the youths don't play anymore. We discussed pre-pod. Yeah, there's usually no more than like between every kind of bill, like 30k in a drawer, in a teller drawer.
That's a lot though for a tiny bank in the middle of nowhere.
Like busy days,
in the,
like
in the drawers, they had that.
Well, yeah, one band of hundreds is like 10 grand, and like that.
Yeah,
I got bands of hundreds.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They don't keep. Ah, damn. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot more money than I thought would be in a small town rando bank. I'll be honest.
Friday comes, paycheck day comes along twice a month or four times a month, depending. And like, you get a lot of people in there like, yes, I want to turn all of this into cash,
which I'm going to put under my mattress because I don't trust banks, even though I'm using a bank right now.
Like you would think, I don't know, even in, like when I was working there, 2010 to 2014, it's like, but still, you guys are, you don't do anything off of cards, off of debit card. All right, fine. Here you go. So then you would go through that. You would like put that money, that paper money out in the course of a Friday, a lot of the times. She might've had to make an appointment to like withdraw that amount of money. I don't remember there ever being like there probably was, but I don't remember the amount of, hey, if somebody comes in wanting to cash a check for more than, I don't know, like $5,000, like get the senior person on staff, like check with somebody on that.
Interesting. How much was in the vault?
I don't know. Hundreds of that. I was in the vault a lot. Well, I wasn't in the money vault a lot. Because
I put together a team. I'm heading to
you
Berlin.
Son of a bitch.
Because the place I worked, you know what? I had a chill job through a lot of high school, so I can't complain, but they overstaffed people, so I spent a lot of time in the documents vault, like organizing those, sorting through those, scanning those digitally for compliance reasons, but
storing it on an SSD that he kept in his backpack, taking it home, selling it on the dark web.
I mean, that occurred to me. I could memorize like a couple of social security numbers, like checking account numbers, like it. Yeah, I didn't, obviously, but like,
yeah, and if you would have, it would have been
power,
in Minecraft.
The temptation, yeah.
And you get to play God. Do I ruin this random person's life? No, I choose not to because I'm a good person. I could,
but
though.
I could.
Oh, I fucking could.
And it makes me a better person to not do this. Yeah. It doesn't make me, it's not that it would make me a bad person to do this. It makes me a good person that I, because I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Deciding not to ruin somebody's life gains me karma.
Yes, exactly. No, it would be a neutral thing to take from them because it's within my power.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's a good thing if I don't take from them.
No, I have decided I'm a good person, and therefore everything I do is good. Yeah. That's how this works.
Mm-hmm.
No, the most I've thought about that job recently is that not realizing that during the school year, it was a job that I worked like for 5 hours Saturday mornings, which sucked having to get up early on a Saturday, but whatever. And like doing that, I made like, I don't know, $60 in a shift, and that was enough for a video game, or that's some weekend walking around money with friends or whatever. And I worry that I don't know if youths today have like jobs like that available to them.
Stop saying that word.
Youths.
Stop saying youths.
The kids today.
The youngins.
The high schoolers, I don't know if their jobs around there are still that flexible, or if things just cost more to an extent of like, I don't know, video games are $70 now. Like I couldn't work one shift, that shift, and buy a new video game anymore. So I don't know if I have a point about all of this. It's just the times they are changing.
I really wish that I had your bank teller job in high school. Oh. Like me and Andrew had very similar high school jobs, and they fucking sucked, dude.
Andrew, I know you... Wait, did you wait tables during the school year, or...?
No, just during the summer.
Wait, so how'd you have money during the school year?
I saved it.
Yeah, oh. It saves up. You don't use it during the summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
You use it all year long.
Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Because during the summer, you can work violating child labor laws.
Yeah, that builds character.
Full giant shifts, 5 days a week, sometimes more.
Yeah. And then also, like, I would do, like, some odd job stuff, like, every once in a while on, like, the farms that my dad's friends owned and worked on, you know, like, that's baling hail and shit.
Yeah.
And they would always give me more money than they said they were going to because...
Uh-huh.
Was my dad's kid, so that was nice. But
Ryan, what were your gigs in high school?
Oh man, I worked at an apartment complex doing the same shit that Andrew did at a golf course, but at an apartment complex.
Yeah.
But it was mostly just me and my one friend who is an interesting person.
Ooh.
And most of the time they didn't want us to work together because if we worked together, he would get nothing done.
Yeah.
So I'd be solitary roaming around an apartment complex spraying weeds with cancer juice.
Roundup.
So yeah, no, I'm probably gonna get cancer.
Like, I mean,
the amount of exposure I've had to that shit, like, pretty sure I'll be getting some cancer at some point.
I've been exposed to my fair share of Roundup, not on like a daily basis, like it kind of seems like you were, but I was exposed to any number of unnamed golf course chemicals that I would have to mix and dump out and spread places and shit. So
yeah.
We'll see what happens to me.
Right.
I don't know. Could be anything. Could be cancer. Could be not cancer. Probably cancer.
Probably cancer. Yeah. No, I loved when you would like be mixing something and you'd like spill it on your hands, but like you're far away from like the bathroom. So you just kind of finish what you're doing before you go wash it off.
Yeah.
So it takes a good 15 minutes with this toxic chemical seeping into your skin. Like, yeah, it's great.
I always got blisters on my hands when I did that shit. The thing was, though, is that I was allergic to latex and they had latex gloves. So it was kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I don't really know if it was from the latex gloves or like the chemicals seeping into the gloves that did it.
It might have soaked through those latex gloves. It had to be pretty heavy duty to withstand some of that shit.
Memories. Fun. All right. This is a news item that you guys may have heard of, linked to a couple of sources here, that is kind of tailor-made for us and our interests and the parts of culture, internet culture, that we pay attention to. Gamergaters and other conspiracy theorists are accusing Sweet Baby Inc., a sensitivity reading and narrative consulting firm, of being a secret cabal responsible for inserting wokeness into all major video games. Have you guys heard anything about this? Have you guys said no?
No. Okay. My favorite part about secret cabals is when they are a very public company with, I'm assuming, a website and are very forthcoming about what they do.
Board of directors that are publicly known.
That's my favorite type of cabal, like, and especially a secret cabal is one that's just an obvious company that's very forthright about everything that they do. And also, you just don't like what they do.
And also composed of 16 people. Right. Like that's a cabal number of people, right? Like
absolutely. That is, yeah. 100%. When it comes to DEI, that's enough. That's all you need to run everything.
That's a new world order number of people.
So a lot of people are characterizing this as Gamergate 2.0, which I disagree with a little bit, because I think a big part of what made Gamergate is how novel it was, how the rhetorical strategies, community strategies deployed there were unlike what a lot of people had experienced before. But yeah, it is the same types of people more or less bullying this company, whose job is fundamentally to make sure that that video game studios, that people creating stories aren't fucking up the marginalized characters included in it. They are not adding diversity to any of these games. They're just making sure that, like, people aren't fucking that up. And to me, this immediately reveals just the ignorance of the people engaging with this, because pretty much every major company that is, like, creating any form of media has some type of sensitivity reader or company just contracted, is just regularly in touch with them for stuff.
It's the only way to operate.
I mean, I like to think of the woke mind virus that conservatives, like, spout off about being actually, like, the reverse, that the woke mind virus is actually this weird fucking obsession that conservatives and alt-righters have with, like, claiming that everything is going woke. I mean, people were talking about last night how, like, the Oscars were going woke because Oppenheimer won so much shit.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah, they're like, Elon fucking Musk was tweeting about, like, the Oscars don't mean anything anymore. Getting an Oscar just means that you went woke. Look at Oppenheimer. And it's like, Oppenheimer is a movie about a bunch of white guys. and they all won. I don't understand how this is quote unquote woke at all. Like, these people are fucking mentally defective.
So you can tell that a lot of people like Elon Musk or of that mindset were hedging their bets that Barbie is probably gonna win. Therefore, we have decided that the Oscars are woke. Therefore, no matter what wins, it's a part of the woke agenda. And, like, we can transition into talking about this if y'all want to more dedicatedly, but Oppenheimer was the safest win for Best Picture.
There was no shot that Barbie was going to win.
Right.
Like, that was never going to happen. The nomination was the win for Barbie. Like, that's just insane to think that it was going to win.
I personally would have wanted something like, I think Anatomy of a Fall is my favorite of the Best Picture nominees I've seen so far. I would have liked if that one won, but also, like,
woman lead.
No.
Too woke.
Woke.
No. Mm. But woman lead who maybe didn't kill her husband? I don't know how this is empowering.
You have to kill your husband in order for it to be empowering.
Yeah, because that's what strong women mean. She can bench 220 and kill men. That's a strong female character.
Yeah, it's Abby from Last of Us 2. Automatically a strong female character because you are literally a
strong,
comma, female character.
But no, it makes sense that Oppenheimer won. And it's cool that a movie my partner worked on won Best Picture. That'll look good on her resume. But yeah, it I don't know. I kind of like discounted Oppenheimer in the running because it was so, yeah, this is the kind of movie that wins a lot of Oscars, that is nominated and probably wins Best Picture. I didn't even think about it.
No, if I was in a pool, it would have been the easiest choice of potentially any category this year. Like,
right.
It seemed pretty much a shoe-in. Cillian Murphy probably too.
I mean, that being said, weird thing from the Oscars for me, Barbie won one Oscar, and it was for the song that they didn't play during the Oscars. Like, Ryan Gosling gave a kick-ass performance of I'm Just Ken, and then the other Barbie song, whose name I can't even remember off the top of my head, won Best Song.
What Was I Made For?
What Was I Made For? Thank you. The name is
the massive hit that, like, transformed the music industry in some ways. I buy it. And didn't What Was I Made For get performed? I'm pretty sure it did get performed. Billie Eilish was there.
I just remember the people talking about the Ken performance.
Because that was the more viral one. Like, What Was I Made For is a very muted song, you know? I'm pretty sure it was performed.
Which song was What Was I Made For?
Yeah, the Billie Eilish
one. What is wrong
Eilish
with you
guys?
We're not talking about the Lizzo song from the beginning of the movie.
No,
that's not Lizzo either. That's Dua Lipa. Dance is
JoJo's
Dua Lipa.
Bizarre Adventure's own Dua Lipa. Dua Lipa is canon in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Yeah.
Yeah. No, What Was I Made For? Performed by Billie Eilish. Yeah, they performed it.
Huh?
It's the one at the end, like when she's becoming a human, and they do the montage of all the women.
That one.
The one that like got a bunch of radio play and was like the mega hit from the one that won Grammys and shit. Like,
not any radio that I listen to.
You never, you don't listen to like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys?
Crazy.
We all saw the same movie.
I guess we hate women, Ryan. I don't know.
What fucking Dua Lipa song are you talking about?
Dance? The one you're talking about? Oh, not the, I see. You're
no,
talking about the
I'm talking about
theme.
The one. Yeah,
from Lizzo. No, yes. Dance is the other mega hit that got a bunch of radio play from that movie.
I've never heard any of these songs except for the Barbie World remake on the radio. On the radio. Never heard the Dua Lipa song on the radio. I know what song you're talking about because I've seen the movie, but like, I've
crazy,
never heard
man.
Anyone talk about or play this song other than the one time that I heard it while watching the movie.
We've never had more different bubbles. Like, this is insane to me. What Was I Made For literally won Grammys. And yeah, Dance was like the summer hit. Like, it was all over, like, hit radio. Like,
I mean, not in Wisconsin, it wasn't.
Apparently not. Jesus Christ.
I mean, my song of the summer 2023 was every song from the new Blink-182 album, but there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you guys are just... Very out of touch, apparently, with culture.
Let me say something about the What Was I Made For? I just listened to a 10-second clip of it. I have heard that song. I have heard it on the radio a bunch. No opinions on it. You're right. It was a lot more popular than I'm maybe thinking. The reason I didn't recognize it is because I don't remember that song being in the movie.
Yeah.
It's like
I had no idea.
I had
no idea it was even related to Barbie.
Yeah, no, it's the climactic moment where Barbie becomes a human and they start using clips of women from all walks of life and a lot of people that are like related to the cast and crew, just like everyday women doing everyday women stuff.
I remember that moment. I just don't remember the song being in the movie.
It was the
I know the song. I know the movie. I know that moment from the movie. They all exist separately in my brain.
The emotional heartbeat of this movie, like the actual takeaway of the movie. Don't remember it.
I just, not the song.
Oh, man. Yep. No, I think I liked this movie quite a bit. But yeah, no.
All right, outside of that, other winners.
Song of the Year, by the way. What was that for? I knew it won Grammys, but I didn't know which one. It won Song of the Year.
Oh. So
there you go. Just a small little award, you know. But I'm just Ken, probably deserved it.
I'm not saying that it deserved it.
No, I know. I'm just making fun of you guys because of your initial reaction. But now I think you both understand where I'm coming from when I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Is my brain melting?
All right. Well, I mean, did they give it to Wet Legs Chaise Lounge in 2022?
Again, like, now we're back into the thing that Lucas knows has to be the best thing because it's what Lucas knows. Lucas went and saw Wet Leg perform live, and then he decided this is the greatest band ever.
They're pretty
and
good.
He knows like five like songs.
Them. Yeah. Hey, all I'm
that
saying
is smart. Yeah, for a band to be proclaimed the greatest band of all time by someone, how many songs do they have to know by that band for it to be valid? What's the cutoff? 10, 20? Like, I feel like you got to know at least an album's worth, right? Like, if you can't name an album's worth of songs, then there's no way that's valid.
I think it has to be a percentage of, like, their total catalog rather than, like, a raw number. Because I could name, like, I could probably name 25 Beatles songs.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, listening to
Beatles doesn't have a massive catalog.
Yeah,
everyone kind of forgets. The Beatles, I think there's only, like, there's less than 100 songs, I want to say, in, like, their official releases and stuff.
Hmm.
Were you gonna say, Andrew?
I was gonna say, like, you think, but then, like, you know, on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have someone like Elton John, one of the more celebrated musical artists of all time. That man doesn't have a great hit rate because he puts out so much goddamn music.
Yeah,
like he has released like dozens of albums and has like a lot of good songs that are well known, but like that has to be a sub 10% hit rate. with the amount of music that he's put out, but like that doesn't take away from the good music that he has. Let's phrase this a different way. How many albums can you name from Wet Leg, Lucas?
They only have one, as far as I'm aware.
Okay, that was Wet a trick Leg. Question. You got it. Yeah.
Well,
I tried to get you. I failed.
Andrew fucking laying a trap for his friend.
Yeah, just like you bet. You chose wisely.
Yeah, wanted Lucas to overstate his knowledge. And
no, I am Lucas the writer, and I wholeheartedly say that Wet Leg is the best band of all time, and the Malibu Crab Shack has the best fish tacos in all of Los Angeles. Done deal.
And what are the best fish tacos in Chicago again?
Chicago Taco Authority.
And how far away was that from your apartment that you lived in?
Oh man, like that was a block away. The middle point between where I was living and the bar I was working at for a couple of years when I was in Chicago. Just pristine. What are the odds?
What are the odds?
Really?
Couldn't you expand that sphere of influence, though? Like, could you say that Chicago Taco Authority, or whatever you said it was called, has, like, the greatest fish tacos in the central and eastern time zone?
I haven't spent enough time in New York. I haven't explored Mexican food in New York.
Yeah, no, but, like, you also
haven't spent enough time in Chicago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like, if that was... like the greatest taco or fish taco that you've ever had, the chances that you've explored all of the other fish taco places in Chicago are low, considering how close that one place is to where you live.
So yeah, you might as well just make it on east of the Mississippi. This is the best fish taco. Why not? At least Malibu Crab Shack is a hike.
Mm-hmm.
Like that shows some gumption. You had to get out there.
The other scenario is that you chose that apartment because of its proximity to that fish taco store. Because those tacos were so good that you had to live close by to it. That's a possibility.
Yeah, it's a total possibility. One question that can make that possibility a certainty. Did you visit this taco place before you lived in that apartment? Or was this after you had moved into that apartment?
I don't think it existed prior to me moving into that apartment. Like, I got there, they set up shop just for me, and it was perfect.
They said, just holy like shit, Lucas is moving to town. Get the fish tacos ready.
I think just like everything in Lucas's life, it didn't exist at all. Like it was, it popped into existence when Lucas moved into the area, like a video game procedurally generating.
Yeah. And it also disappears every time he goes to sleep.
Exactly. Me and you only exist, Andrew, when we hop on this Zoom.
Lucas, can I just say, it has been an honor being a part of your simulation.
Nah.
Lucas, don't go. Please.
Don't go to sleep, please.
Don't leave the Zoom.
It's like I die every night.
Yeah. every time you log off this Zoom, Lucas, I cease to exist for a moment. Every time you send us a text message in Facebook Messenger, I come back to life for a few minutes to give a response, and then I go back to the place. Don't send me back to the place.
Not existing hurts.
It's pain. It's not nothing. It's just pain.
Also, I was trying to look up like any kind of. Wait. Oh my god! Did they? Okay, nope. All right, they're still open. I was worried for a second, but they're still open. CTA, fantastic. Also, I was trying to look up like any kind of blog, any kind of like TripAdvisor style website to back this up. Turns out I just don't trust any of them because a lot of them open with like Fado's Irish Pub, great place for fish tacos in Chicago, and like I don't trust that shit. Get out of here, like,
Lucas. You might have been there with me, or maybe I just sent you a screenshot like. At one point, Jade and I were driving around the Fox Valley area, and we're like, we're in the mood for like some good Irish food, but like, there's not a lot of good Irish food places.
What is Irish food?
It's like
Guinness.
There's a lot of stuff potatoes, that's cooked. Guinness. Yeah,
roasts.
Potatoes Irish food.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like cooked in a certain way and seasoned with a certain amount of stuff. Look, it's not like. Yeah, like stews with like carrots, potatoes, celery, usually beef like or lamb.
Beef stew.
Yeah.
Soda bread. Dude, I could fuck with some soda bread right now.
Shepherd's pie, puff pastry.
English food? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, it's similar for a reason. They're right fucking next to each other. I mean, are you going to tell me that Portuguese food is not anywhere close to Spanish food? They're probably fairly similar.
There's an ocean and political divide
beef.
There.
Corned beef, come on.
Corned beef is definitely English. Just throwing this out there.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of overlap. They're fucking connected to each other.
They were owned
by the same guy at one point. Like,
that's fair, but they're not connected to each other. They don't share a land border.
Yeah, but like, within swimming distance. Like, if you and I could like train for a little bit, we could swim.
You and I could not swim the English Channel, no matter how hard.
No,
we
the English Channel is between England and France. That's much wider.
They call it the Strait of Gibraltar or some shit. I don't know what it's called.
That's also different.
I'm throwing shit out there. I don't know what it's called.
I forget actually what it's called.
There's no way that wasn't in modern times. First person to swim between England and Ireland. When was that? They're calling it the English Channel, but that's not...
Yeah, the English Channel is...
That's the French...
The word. North Channel.
Supposedly Matthew Webb. 1860s.
Yeah, no. There's no fucking shot we could make that swim, dude. could do it before the 1860s.
It's 13 miles.
It's 13 miles. You could just casually swim 13
miles?
In the ocean.
If we trained,
I'm dead. I'm going to die. 100%.
Lucas could do it. Lucas, you could do it. I mean, you'd have to like again train for swimming, but like you have the endurance, you could do it.
I mean, swim distance for a triathlon is, I understand like this terminology I'm about to use is whack. Only 1.5 kilometers.
That's because you're running a fucking marathon afterwards and you also biked like 100 miles beforehand.
Dude, I don't think that this is easy. Like the North Channel, it doesn't even say 1860s, it says 1947 is the first one. And I think that's the closest point between England and Ireland. Like it's way up north where like they're almost touching. And yeah, it's Northern Ireland. It's not even Ireland proper.
List of North Channel swimmers. Oh, Lucas,
North
did you maybe...
Channel is not
Did you maybe look up the English channel?
I did look up the English channel, yes.
Yeah, dude, like if you go from like what we think of, like if you were to swim from Liverpool to Ireland, that's way farther than the English channel, like from the actual shortest point there.
The English channel is over 60 miles wide.
Yeah, look at like mainland UK to Ireland. Like it's, you can just see it on a map. Like it's huge. There's way bigger distance there. It's like double the size of the English Channel. Like if you were to go from this tip on the far west, Aberdaron to Arklow, that point there, that's like at least 100 miles. Like you the Northern Channel thing is definitely the closest point. And yeah, that's like 15 miles. And that's some nightmare shit. Bad. And yeah, no one did it until 1947, which makes me think it's fucking tricky.
I would like to know what the tides are before I committed to this.
It wasn't until post-World War II that someone successfully did this shit. I don't know, man. I don't
think this is the first time they had a reason to. They were getting guns to the IRA or something.
They swam with guns on their back. Took the dude 15 hours. Like, no shit.
That's a mile an hour. That's swimming. That's swimming speed, baby.
This is the start. We're gonna find Andrew in 10 years.
You're gonna find me like, fucking face down in the frigid waters of the North Atlantic.
Yeah. You're like, yep, that's me. I bet you're wondering how I got the situation. By the way, this list of North Channel swimmers, it's not sequential. It's not like as the record gets narrowed down, you'll notice it's fluctuating because it's a list of everyone who's done it. It's not like the English Channel or like Alcatraz to San Francisco. Like, it's not a common thing to the point where they can list every single person who has done it. And it's not a huge article. So, what's the record? What's the shortest time? There's a few people who have done it in under 10 hours, but like there are actually, I take it back. There are two people who have swam that in under 10 hours and they were both barely under 10 hours. So, oh shit. And this list includes people multiple times. For example, Allison Streeter has three of the top four times. So,
and they've got relay teams. The relay teams are not faster than the people swimming it individually, by the way, which is really funny. They're just straight up not faster.
You are ready for a 14-hour swim through frigid North Atlantic waters with crazy tides.
I feel like after those first 3 miles, it all feels the same. As in nothing. It feels like nothing.
As in it feels like I want to just let it go and sink down to the watery depths.
I feel the call.
I mean, listen, is there an upper limit on the relay team? Because if we got like 100 people together, no problem.
It says team size. It looks like six is the most common, but there's all the way down to three.
Ah.
And then a couple of teams of four and five, but mostly six.
Yeah, six is the maximum. That is weird. Yeah, the best relay time is like 1 minute faster than the best. So actually, whoa, 9:53. No, the best relay time is slower than Allison Streeter's record of 9 hours, 53 minutes. So
yeah.
Relay teams can't even match her pace. I know that this is one of the sports that women are generally better than men at, like long distance swimming. So this makes sense that it would be dominated by women towards the top.
Yep. What is the record? 10 hours something minutes?
No, 9 hours and 53 minutes and 42 seconds.
Got it.
There's only been two people ever in the history of humankind to swim it faster than 10 hours.
Ryan, you and I are staring down the barrel of history.
And also, by the way, they're not swimming from England to Ireland. They're swimming from Scotland to Northern Ireland. So again, throwing it out there.
Most of these that I see say Ireland to Scotland.
Yeah, but it's Northern Ireland. Like it's a thing. The North Channel between Northern Ireland and the Mull of Galloway, the southernmost point of Scotland. That's the easiest one. Yeah.
Anyway, that's our Oscars discussion.
Yeah, we couldn't do that shit.
No.
I couldn't win an Oscar, and I could not swim from England to Ireland. 0%.
To cover the big ones, Boy and the Heron, best animated film, obviously.
Yeah. Beat out Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I wouldn't say obviously. I think Spider-Verse, I mean, for me, it was the better animated movie. I know that wasn't the common opinion.
Okay.
Into the Spider-Verse, definitely.
Oh, my God, all time.
Yeah, Across the Spider-Verse. Should a movie that was not a full story win an Oscar? We'll find out next year with Dune 2, which I guess at least has an ending.
It's the completed story.
It's the ending of the story.
I thought there was a third one coming.
Yeah, they're going to make more books, but this one has an actual, like, ending.
Oh, okay.
Unlike the first one where they pan out.
Dune Part 2 ends the story that was told in the book Dune, which was the first book.
Okay.
Dune Part 3 would likely be, I don't know, what is, like, God Emperor, not God Emperor of Dune. Dune Messiah. God Emperor of Dune is a book in the Dune series. I think Dune Messiah is the next book in the series.
Coming up next. Emperor of
Dune, yep. It doesn't say where it is in the... Oh, but there's a weird worm guy on the cover. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's God Emperor of Dune. He turns into a worm. I have not read any of the Dune books.
Does his partner still love him?
I have read the synopsis of almost every Dune book.
Do you get
it? There's,
do you understand, Andrew?
No, that's when, not to be reductive, but that's when Dune really starts to get interesting, right? When it's like, hey, we're leaping into the future now, and this is focusing on what, just like, the bringing in Paul's kids, what they did with his empire, how it's changed, how his ideals have been compromised, how...
Dune Messiah and Children of Dune are basically the arc of Paul. Like, and then like his children come into play in that third book. God Emperor of Dune is when shit starts to even, like, when shit starts to get off the rails for a book series that was always off the rails and incomprehensible. Where like one of his kids turns into a giant worm from eating so much spice.
Love it.
Al
Pacino. We'd be remiss to not talk about Al Pacino just skipping the nominees and just being like, it's Oppenheimer, fuck you guys. Like,
oh, I didn't even see that. I did not watch.
That was pretty insane. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Powerful, powerful.
Yeah, what a power move. Like, they were literally just like, right, I see Oppenheimer. And everyone was like, for real? Like, is this it? Like, are we getting another Warren Beatty situation? Like, what if it's just the nominees? I don't know what the fuck's happening.
Best original screenplay, Anatomy of a Fall. That was a really tightly written movie. I agree with that one. Adapted screenplay, American Fiction. I really want to read that book, Erasure, that it's based on. Makeup, hairstyling, Poor Things. Production design, Poor Things. Costuming, Poor Things. Won a lot of the technical awards. International feature film, The Zone of Interest. That was in contention for Best of the Year. For me, whose opinion matters more than the Oscars, I've decided. So,
it's your simulation.
Yeah. The Oscars didn't exist until you thought about the Oscars, and then procedurally generated a bunch of movies.
Not unlike Chicago Taco Authority. Supporting actor, Robert Downey Jr. beating out Ryan Gosling from Barbie, who I think a lot of people thought was the favorite, but
I'm not saying that like Gosling wasn't like really good. I wouldn't have been surprised if he won, but I thought that was going to Robert Downey Jr.
I feel like he was barely in Oppenheimer, but okay.
He was in it a lot.
Not that memorable. I don't know. visual effects, Godzilla Minus One. Cool that there was an international pick for this one.
Too bad it was the worst movie that ever existed.
The casual sexism of the film and kind of erasure of the fucked up shit that the Japanese military did during World War II is I don't know about that one, but I like the visual effects of like other Godzilla films more than that one. Film editing, Oppenheimer. Cinematography, Oppenheimer. Sound, Zone of Interest, with correct pick on that one. Easy. Best score, Oppenheimer. I don't know. I'm not really sure about that one. Original song, What Was I Made For? Best actor, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer. Best director, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer. Actress, Emma Stone, Poor Things. Yeah.
That's... Oh, yeah, and Emma Stone was pissed that she won.
What?
Oh, over Lily Gladstone, yeah.
Yeah, she really thought it was going to go to Lily, and she had won some stuff earlier, so like Poor Things had been doing very well, so it was kind of like, oh, I'll probably give it to Lily, and then she won, and she was kind of like, there was no celebration whatsoever. Mm. It was just like, oh, me?
A little weird that Killers of the Flower Moon didn't get anything, but I feel like that movie, even by the Oscar voting body, is graded on like the Scorsese curve.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like,
I still didn't see it.
It's good. He did one of these again, but more interesting and focusing on the characters who aren't white. I dug it. And the other piece of news here, for better or worse, Rooster Teeth is Dead by Warner Brothers and David Zaslav's hand.
Yeah, poor one out.
They Rip. Killed our boy.
Have you guys heard about how this will affect like Funhouse, like other corollary like brands under the Rooster Teeth banner?
Yeah, I watched some of the live streams where they kind of laid things out and tried to follow along with like what some of the other like individual creators were posting about it. I don't know if you did at all, Ryan.
No, not really. Just what you had sent me.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, like, the thing was, even Funhouse had been joking about it for, like, a while that, like, Funhouse was dying. Not, like, Rooster Teeth as a whole, but they're like, yeah, let's see how long we can ride this shit out. But they did not know that it was, they weren't, like, told ahead of time. When we found out that, like, Rooster Teeth was shutting down, it's because, like, 20 minutes earlier, they did an all-team meeting and they said, hey, guys, you all just lost your jobs. And so they were like, I mean, like, they had, like, scheduled posts up. It was really funny because, like the people were posting about, like, oh, man, we love you guys. You thanks for supporting us all these years. And then, like, at, like, 2 o'clock, a tweet was sent out, like, check us out on our live stream tomorrow where Ryan Haley tries every single kind of fast food while we talk about the Oscars. And then they're like, ah, shit. They said that it's not, like, effective immediately. They're shut down. A couple of different sources gave like sometime in the middle of May as like when like everything actually gets turned off. They said basically like people that are on some of the channels that were given permission to still keep operating, like Funhouse and like the main Rooster Teeth channel, they're being given the option to like keep working on stuff that they specifically wanted to like finish up or just like fuck off and go try to find other work.
Right.
I know a lot of the Funhouse team is sticking around at least part time to try to finish some things up.
If anything, to have a completed thing in their portfolio, like
And it's funny because like they're like clearly now they're off schedule. Like they posted a video a few days after it was supposed to go up, and it was like a fucking banger, and like an anime mech gameplay series where they. Like, I don't know. I thought it was really, really funny. And everyone in the comments were like, yeah, let's go. Riding off to Valhalla. Like, getting the heaters out there before their time's up. So they might just be, like, working on shit that they were, like, more proud of. And trying to get that out before, like, May.
Mm.
But yeah, then it's game over. Not really sure what's going to happen, everybody.
This column will be live on Tuesday, tomorrow, as of this recording. But yeah, for Anime News Network, I wrote about this. I wrote about this closure. Just how it's weird how Rooster Teeth has kind of been at the center of, or at the very least, one or two degrees removed from, like, every internet thing ever, it seems like. How it was kind of the inception of hey, yeah, if you're passionate about something, you and your friends can do what you love and make money on the internet, because we can make money on the internet now.
Yeah.
And just their model of, yeah, so we're gonna be posting some stuff onto YouTube, but really, if you want the best stuff, if you want the stuff first, you gotta subscribe to our website and get the exclusive stuff there, but it'll be on YouTube eventually. How, like, it being Rooster Teeth being shut down and, like, information coming out that apparently Rooster Teeth hadn't been popular for a while, hadn't had its peak subscription numbers in a while, is all kind of indicative of, oh man, hey, if this model can't work for Rooster Teeth of all people, like, who can it work for? And
yeah, I mean, they didn't. I mean, yeah, maybe this model does not work. Like, I don't know what other organizations like this even existed, but like, they're doing really, really, really hot for a long time. But the, like, the last couple of years, there were a few key departures. I mean, not even just in the Funhouse mm-hmm. channel, but like in Rooster Teeth as a whole. And they were replaced with newer people that, like, the old heads, you know, weren't, like, you know, they didn't, like, come to Rooster Teeth to watch those people. And the channels, I don't think, really kept up with trends or, like, how to, like, stay popular in today's YouTube or internet environment. And, like, yeah, viewership is, like, literally a fraction of what it used to be. Like, Funhouse videos do not crack 100,000 views anymore, and they haven't in, like, maybe 2 to 3 years. And, like, they used to consistently get over 1 million views.
Rooster Teeth was always a personality-driven brand. Like, from the right. very beginning,
yeah.
they had a podcast. They kind of caught this trend of, like, you know, the influencer, like, parasocial relationship thing way early, like, way mm-hmm. before it was mainstream, when you had to, like, download content because there was nowhere really to host things. Like, Red versus Blue used to have to be, like, downloaded and, like, shared
yeah.
via, like, alternate platforms because there was nowhere to post it and stuff. Like, it was always just kind of very grassroots, personality-driven content. And then, yeah, the personalities started to leave, and, like, they never made anything good. Like, you know, like, from the very beginning, like, Monty Ohm dying kind of yeah. ended Red versus Blue being genuinely, like, groundbreaking
mm-hmm.
and then it just went to just more of the same, and they tried to, like, break in with, like, Genlock and stuff, like, break into actual mainstream, and it was just not good.
I mentioned that Genlock is remembered as a weird Michael Jordan vehicle, a Michael yeah. B. Jordan vehicle at best. Like, even Mecca fans are like, maybe not this one.
No, like, Ruby was never considered genuinely good. Like, they always were
widely
good
popular,
for though. Well, they were always good for YouTube, and the yep. reason that they were good for YouTube is because it had personalities that mm-hmm. people were fans of in it, so that made it more personal. Like, the fact that all the Ruby voice actors were just Rooster Teeth employees, that was, like, the appeal is, like, I like these personalities, so I'm gonna watch the show, check out their work. Which is passable. Yeah. Like, it's fine. Like, it's not groundbreaking. Like, someone who's not a fan of those personalities wouldn't really be interested in that. Like,
there is an hour and a half H Bomber Guy video titled "Why Ruby is a Disappointment."
And it's just that. Like, it's yeah. just they were never good enough to stand on their own merit. They were only as good as, like, their hardcore fans who love the personalities involved. And then as those personalities leave, or there's scandals and drama and everything like that, people lose interest.
And
it was appealing to a demographic that aged out of them. Like, their content was appealing to people in high school and probably, like, early college and everything like that, who had a lot more time on their hands. And then those people grew up, and they don't have hours and hours to just, like, dive into all this content that doesn't really matter.
If you were watching Rooster Teeth in 2005, when Rooster Teeth was the new hotness, you got kids now, probably. Yeah. You're old. Yeah. You're not a valued demographic anymore.
Even the, like, quote unquote, like, younger people that replaced, you know, some of the like older members of like Rooster Teeth and Funhouse that that people like really, really liked, who, you know, those people are like 40 years old now. The young people that replaced them are like 31 at the youngest. Like they're not going to get the youth demographic to like start watching them. And the older people that like maybe this content is made for, like Ryan said, like they don't really do this anymore.
I don't want to put on airs and say that like anything I worked on or like my career is anything close to comparable to Rooster Teeth, but like, yeah, that was an issue I noticed. I am noticing, like, kind of working in digital media, like content creation, journalism, whatever we're going to call it. Like, man, I'm 28. How am I often one of the youngest people on any of these teams? Like, that doesn't seem great in any capacity. Like, there's the pipeline is drying up. The pipeline is narrowing, and that is concerning. I mentioned this in that column that's coming out, but like, I don't know. Yeah, support these people, follow these people as they go to other projects, as they go elsewhere, support their work that way, because that is the more genuine version of the stuff that they are making than if another company picks up the Rooster Teeth brand and helps some of these IP limp towards the finish line. But like, there aren't other places for these people to go to. There's not jobs like this out there right now. And maybe they'll go indie. Maybe they'll start their own stuff and be able to sell out to a company like Warner Brothers 21 years from now and eventually get shut down again. Yeah. The cycle continues, maybe, but like,
Maybe they'll go into Fortnite and make a goofy little thing about how, oh, the Fortnite samurai sword looks like a Cheerio, and then that, then they just become a huge brand and everyone's like, wow, they're the new hotness, I love all these personalities, and then the personalities start abusing their fans and getting into overt drama with each other, and then there's like weird drama at the very top, like with the founders of the company, and then everyone kind of gets older and starts to move on with their lives and do other things, and then the audience starts to dry up, and yeah, somewhere along the line they got acquired by like 5 different corporate entities, and then it ends.
And I guess that is a point that we should definitely bring up, that like, yeah, for his interesting a spot as Rooster Teeth occupied in like internet culture, yeah, they're pretty consistent and substantiated accusations of homophobia, transphobia, and like, I understand a part of that is this was an online company in the aughts and that culture was rampant because that was just the dominant culture too.
That was culture.
That was culture, yeah.
But then also, sexual improprieties, it was all there. And in some ways, it's like, wow, Rooster Teeth is a really great encapsulation of this era of the internet, this era of niche culture, counterculture, internet culture, whatever. And now they're gone. And what's left to replace them? What's left to fill that void? Maybe nothing. Maybe brands owned by less cool company. I don't know. But it's weird and evokes some kind of feelings in me. So, yeah.
I saw a lot of takes of, this is what you get for going woke, Rooster Teeth. You went woke, then went broke. And it's like, you guys are mentally ill.
Guys, like, they're one of their flagship animated series, Camp Camp, has a character where the joke is, oh yeah, he was just like a little Hitler. Like that's the joke. Like that, you know? Yeah.
Hollywood's done it too. Yeah, no, it was never destined to succeed. The digital media landscape is forever shifting, and it's nearly impossible to stay on top for any significant amount of time. There are no brands from our childhood, really, that are still prominent nowadays. Like, it's just not a thing.
Pokemon! Keep it going. Let me keep some childhood left. I don't fucking know.
There's no digital content brands, as we made fun of in the last episode.
Film Cow. Film Cow's doing all right. Jason Steele.
Are they around?
No. They're around.
A lot of these people are around, Lucas. I'm saying they're a ghost of their former self. They're not major influencers in this landscape that we have.
I don't know, man. Spatula Madness still hits. What's going on with Katie Britt and Kate Middleton?
Yeah, it's funny that they have the same name.
Right?
Completely different situations. Did y'all see the Katie Britt State of the Union response?
No.
I didn't watch her do it. I read what she said. I've seen the screenshots of her. And I've seen the Scarlett Johansson Saturday Night Live parody, which I thought was really funny. But
Didn't she make some shit up?
Well, she's just a psycho mom.
She twisted a lot of shit. Yeah.
She came off as terrifying.
Like, yeah.
She came off as a super villain.
What is
the way that she would go from like the American dream?
It's dead.
Yeah, well, it's like it's what we all hold on to. We are steeped in the blood of patriots, and that American dream is dead. Just like instantly transforming from like America's mom, whatever she's trying to be, to like, you're all gonna fucking die. Like, I don't know who watched that and like greenlit, but like, dude, that was crazy shit, man. And I loved, that was my favorite thing to watch all weekend, was just like Republican talk shows airing, or conservative media like airing the State of the Union response, and then immediately cutting to the correspondents in the room, and they're all just kind of like stunned silence, like, so she seems lovely. That was not good. Like, just like, what the fuck just happened?
I had seen gestures at this, but apparently she referenced like a instance of sexual assault, like named a sexual assault survivor. That survivor has since like disavowed Katie Britt and been like, don't use me for that shit.
Well, what happened was she told the story of the way she described it was a woman who in Biden's America was kidnapped by like migrant traffickers,
mm-hmm.
and assaulted, you know, multiple times over the course of several years. And it was actually in Mexico in 2004. I think she described it as like being done by Mexican immigrants in America, like during the Biden administration. And it was actually like a young Mexican girl in Mexico in 2004. She found a bad thing that happened.
Right.
And said that it happened in America under Biden.
Right. It's the things that they did when, like, there was racial protests that were, like, sometimes escalating to riots and everything. And they were like, this is what Biden's America would look like. And it's like, but it's literally Trump's America. Like, they're doing the same, like, this is what is going to happen in Biden's America. And it's like, that was literally Bush's Mexico. Like,
yeah.
It's actually insane. So yeah, no, that was crazy. Like, when I first heard, like, oh, it's the youngest ever woman to be elected to the Senate as a Republican, I was like, interesting. Is she gonna be like new Marjorie Taylor Greene, new Lauren Boebert? Like, is she, you know, like, is she like a, what's her personality gonna be? And it turns out her personality is just
bad,
like unhinged, like, but in a very different way from MTG and Lauren Boebert, like, just like clearly trying to be the face of the Republican Party, and oof, if that's the face, my God. And then did anyone see MTG's reaction to Joe Biden, or Joe Biden's reaction?
That was really funny. He's like, whoa.
Yeah, she was like all trumped up. She had like the hat and everything like that, and she was like getting in his face kind of, and he kind of went like, ooh, like, and then it pans back to her, and you could tell she's like kind of ashamed, like for once in her life she's like, ooh, that didn't feel good, I just got dunked on by a quote unquote senile old man who's just kind of like, whoa, gonna fucking kill me? Whoa.
Still enough acuity to nope out of that situation, Biden. All right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not nope, like very publicly be like, whoa, so scary. Like, what the fuck? What? Yeah. So that was good. And then I don't know if you guys saw the AI altered image of Kate Middleton that the
posted. I did. Yeah.
I want to preface this with, I don't believe the conspiracy theories, but man, the royal family is really like almost trying to make it a thing. The way that they keep doing this shit.
Because like the reason they did it, I mean, they even said like, hey, everybody, thanks for your concerns. Like, cause everyone's been like, hey, where's Kate Middleton? What's going on? There's like a lot of conspiracy theories about what's going on with her. Anywhere from she's dead to she got a BBL. And they said like, because I think in England yesterday was Mother's Day. They said like, hey, everybody, thanks for your concerns and questions. But as you can see, like the Princess of Wales and her family are doing just great. And like, you can clearly see where like the image has been like photoshopped and altered. And it's very possible that like, because it's the royal family and they're obsessed with perfection, that they were just photoshopping like the kids to make them smile.
That's what they were doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, cause you know, taking parts from other photos and putting them in there, but like, it's a very bad look to be like, hey, look, she's safe and sound, and have it be a fake photo.
The kid on the left hand is fucked up.
Yeah, no, it's all fucked.
And the kid on the right, the girl, like you can see her sleeve ends and becomes a different sleeve. And it's like transparent at some points. Something Jade said this morning is like, it's like some people are thinking now that she might have had like just a hysterectomy.
Yeah, I think she had a serious medical procedure.
And the royal family, the royal family, like, is very secretive about all that shit. I guess like a lot of them were upset that King Charles told people he had cancer, like he like wasn't supposed to do that. It's so stupid.
No, but he's taking elixirs to address that. He'll be fine.
Yeah, he's drinking lead and eating crushed mummy.
No. So, yeah, I'm not fanning the flames. I'm not saying there's some massive conspiracy. Most likely she just wants to be out of the public eye because she's undergoing like health challenges and everything and is fine in the broader sense of the word. But for the royal family to just fuck that up instead of just, hey, you know, she's just taking a break from the public spotlight. She'll be back soon. She loves you guys. Maybe even like a voice recording of her being like, hey, everyone, like, see you soon. Just staying out of the eye for taking a quick break from life.
That's
not how they want to do it. They want to be like, no, we're gods. We are perfect. So
that's been the mode that royal families have operated in through pretty much all of human history. And it has almost always ended poorly for them. So whatever.
I mean, the British eat that shit up. Like the royal family says that they're gods, and the British citizenry goes, yeah, we know.
Yeah,
you are. And we love you for it.
Wait, I'm sorry, is Kate Middleton in the process of becoming God Emperor of Dune?
Yeah, no, she's away from the public eye as she enters her worm era.
Yeah. She's just shoveling handfuls of spice into her mouth in the Tower of London. Just fucking going for it.
Communicating with God.
Yeah, she's going to emerge in her pure, beautiful form.
Biblically accurate Kate Middleton.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Listen, if there was a weird worm guy in any of the promotional material for either of the Dune movies that have come out so far, maybe I'd be in there. That's all I'm saying.
Like worm human?
Yeah.
Or like...
No, like, okay. Yeah.
It's like, there's plenty of worms. Like, that's...
Yeah, but aren't there those worms guys?
You saw the popcorn bucket. They got worms.
Well, the worms are around. If that's all you want is worms. But no, if you want humans that had become worms... I mean, unless, look, maybe that's now canon, now that a human has become a worm. Maybe all the worms were once human. Okay. And then they fell. Mm. They became fell beasts.
Mm. All right. Now you're speaking my language.
Yeah.
That's some From Software language. I like that language. Yeah.
This should be our fucking 50 Shades of Grey, where we just do a spin-off fanfic of Dune, except for all the worms are people. And then we kind of like, oh, they're not worms, they're actually like billionaires who were once people, and oh, they're really kinky, but in the most vanilla way possible, so that it appeals to millions of people, and then we make millions of dollars. I'm down. Who says no?
Ah, why not? My wild card era. Here we go. I've been playing some video games lately. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and Helldivers 2 with my boy Andrew.
Yeah.
And I'm coming to the conclusion that maybe video games are best when they're a little dumb.
Best? Or like, maybe video games are fun.
Video games can be good when they are dumb.
Yeah.
They don't have to not be dumb to be good.
Helldivers 2.
Being dumb does not make them good inherently.
Helldivers 2 is maybe the best example of this. The writing in that game, the satire in that game, the one of the few pieces of media, one of the few video games that is like viscerally anti-fascist.
Yeah,
but then still like, very fun to engage with and do fascism in is fantastic. Like every time I am playing as a character and they are just blasting non-sentient giant bugs and screaming, get a taste of this democracy. It's
and you'll never destroy our way of life. The thing is, this is all intentional because all of this is such a callback to Starship Troopers, which is also a parody satire movie from the 80s about like the creep of fascism, which is also completely ignored by people that watch it.
People really and like the fascism.
They love the fascism and they do not know that it's parody. And a lot of fascists also love Helldivers and think that the fascism is the good part of it, not the funny part of it. They don't think that it's like stupid. They think it's all genuine and they love it.
They talk about that on Behind the Bastards a lot, especially with Starship Troopers, where they're just like, we can't movies and TV shows, they shouldn't have a message. Like we should stop. We should stop trying to make things poignant. The what's it called? What was that satirical essay about eating all the babies? A Humble Proposal or something that. Yeah, like that'll just be real. People will just take that as like, yeah, actually, babies probably taste pretty good. Like baby lamb, you know, lamb tastes good. Like veal, people like veal. I'm sure human babies taste good. They're probably pretty tender. Like, and then everyone just forgets the part where it's like, no, fucking morons, this is satire.
Scientists develop technology conceived of in sci-fi book to explore the worst parts of the human condition.
Yeah.
There's
no world where Helldivers 2, after some DLC, does like one of those things where it tries to like make you feel bad and is like, what if I told you that there's a cloaking device and those bugs aren't actually bugs, they're humanoid aliens that have their own culture and religion and like
what the robots are for.
There are two enemies, there are two factions, there's the bugs and there's the robots, and the robots are called the socialist threat.
And the robots
that
have...
means they're forward with it, like the developers. They don't want you to feel bad when you kill the robots necessarily, like, you know, but yeah, when they try to like twist the knife of like, aren't you morally compromised? Like, didn't you just compromise on your morals when you killed that? And it's just like, nah, it's a video game.
It is a lot of fun to kill the robots, but also like you are doing this and it is, unless you lack basic media literacy, which a lot of people do, unfortunately, a lot of gamers do, unfortunately, it is very clear that what you are doing here, you are the bad guy. You are the bad guy going on a military offensive to destroy.
Eradicate. Yeah.
to do a genocide. Like, literally some of the mission descriptions are, yeah, you got to thin the enemy numbers here. We just need these people dead.
Yeah, and there's like one of the missions, destroy the nest so the bugs cannot procreate and spread their ideology. It's like, damn. But it is really fun. And it's fun to like get into character.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you'll like periodically hear the guy telling you, hey, don't forget to go to the superstore and spend your requisition dollars so you can be a good capitalist and support democracy.
Andrew and I made a joke that the currency in this video game should be war medals, should be awards that your fascist overlords are bestowing you. Not entirely different. Like, we got it pretty close to how the currency system in this game works.
Yeah.
And then pointedly, I think to really make the metaphors, the themes of this game land home, there's no like respawn mechanic. Like, you are not creating an avatar and then are somehow
being revived. Brought back to life.
Like, yeah. they're sending a new troop in, a new soldier in for you to control with a different voice and sometimes different, like, body proportions every time. So, like, every time you die, they're sending another human being in the universe of the game in to likely die in a very stupid way in a war that very clearly does not matter. But only through some literally alien other is the society able to function by doing violence to them. It's great.
The other part of it is that the game is really good.
Yeah. Like,
the video game part of it works really fucking good, and it's a lot of fun to play. If like that role-playing aspect of it wasn't there, the game would still be good. It probably would fizzle out quicker than it is going to. But like, it works really well and it's hella fun to play.
Sometimes friction points are fantastic in video games and make them better. The fact that you can't just call in a nuclear strike, you have to input a code, then go to the nuclear bomb that has been dropped onto the planet's surface, enter in another code there, protect it while it arms itself, and then run away as it's about to blow up and just crater an entire area is really fun and adds a sense of tension and drama that is... I wish there was more stuff like that in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, because while I am having fun with that game, it is so smooth and mirror sheen and frictionless that I kind of just feel like I'm getting in there and having serotonin hit my brain as I go through checklists. I think a really good example of this... Andrew, you remember how in Tears of the Kingdom that there are not quite mini games, but like little sections where you have to figure out how to prop up a sign and like you get a little bit of a reward.
Yeah.
And it's a game to like explore, like, hey, here's the physics mechanics that we have in this game. Like, here's how you can explore that in some really ingenuitive ways. You also have to hoist up signs and you get a little bit of a reward in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You just hold triangle to do that.
You don't solve a weird little puzzle in your own way. You just push button.
You get push button, little jingle happens, get a little bit of a material advantage, a quick shot of serotonin, and then that's it. And that's all that game does. And I'm liking it. I'm enjoying it. But I don't know. Are there more rewarding ways to spend my time? Maybe. Yeah. I like how this is metatextually engaging with the series as a whole, changing things, adding more depth to some of these characters. That's cool. The game looks a little too good where it's uncanny. And like seeing these characters, these oddly lifelike characters move around in a world in a way that's distinctly not lifelike, in a way that's distinctly video game physics, is kind of unnerving to me, but it good. I'm 13 hours in and excited to put like 40 more into this. Yeah. What are y'all checking out? Or can I go off about The Sopranos quick?
Spoiler free, but pop off. I mean, yeah, I know the end spoiler. Everyone knows that, but yeah.
So this is just the best TV show like ever made. I'm trying to think of others that I like that I also think are great, that are foundational to who I am as a human being, but yeah, I can't recommend them as wholeheartedly, as without caveats, as much as I can The Sopranos. I know the ending to The Sopranos is controversial and pretty well known right now, but by the end of season six, like, all of these characters, all of the themes of the show have been so thoroughly explored that it's like, hey, this either cuts with a hard end or we spend another six seasons just going through these characters' lives, just hammering home the themes, the unique ways in which these people are terrible, the cycles of how they are terrible, how they try to be better and fail to over and over again for another couple of seasons, or we pull the ripcord. And I'm glad they pulled the ripcord when they did. Good TV. Good TV that still holds up.
You watching The Wire next?
I saw one season of The Wire. I think Marie
watched
and
the first season together.
Freshman year of college. Good times. I think Marie and I are going to maybe check out The Bear next. Otherwise, we'll get weird with it. Well,
it's a good one.
Probably should be watching that.
Yeah, I think I'm owed like some, all right, let's check out a little bit of anime now. Let's test the waters on that again. See if any of this stuff resonates. I have better ideas.
I demand anime.
Has Maria ever watched an anime?
Yeah. Really likes Miyazaki. You hit or miss with a lot of other stuff.
That's not what I mean.
That is so mainstream.
Right, like, exactly.
Has Maria ever watched an anime series? A capital A anime series?
We were watching, is it Satoshi Kon? Yeah, Satoshi Kon's Paranoia Agent, and really like that one. But now, Crunchyroll is shuttering Funimation, and we kind of lost track of where we're able to watch that legally, so we fell off it.
What about you legally?
Yeah, I was gonna say, you guys are just legal Stevens.
That was actually a thing at the Crunchyroll Anime Awards. An announcer referenced an anime that's like, oh, there's no legal way to watch that. Maybe y'all should get on that. I don't know.
If there's no legal way to watch it, then there should be no guilt.
Yeah, like, exactly. Right. Yeah.
If there's like a platform that like costs money that has it and you're choosing not to pay, then I guess if you're that type of person, then you can feel guilty about it. But if there's literally no legal way to watch it, there should be zero guilt whatsoever in finding alternatives. Because the alternative is nothing.
I think it was more of the, hey, this is a celebration of anime, of that event. And like a company that is framing itself as a steward of that space is referencing a thing that like, you guys could, hey, if this is good enough to shout out, maybe get Blu-rays out of it. Maybe host that's, that was where that was coming from. But yeah, no, I doubt there's an anime as good as The Sopranos. Ryan, what's going on in your watch through? Where are you at?
We haven't been watching lately because, we've got The Traitors and now Survivor has started up. Amazing Race starts this week, so I think we'll be on a Sopranos hiatus, at least for the foreseeable future. And then, some more scripted stuff's going to be coming out. I mean, Sopranos definitely in the discussion for best series of all time. I think the issue with best series of all time always comes down to, like, how do you deal with limited series? Because it's so much easier to do a perfect limited series with no flaws.
Because it's kind of just a long movie broken up into chapters.
So that there's definitely a few limited series that only did one season. That's like, I don't know. That's tough to top because there's always like shitty episodes when you get, 5-6 seasons of a show. Like there's always episodes that are forgettable and don't matter as much, like because it's just too much content. So it's a lot more tricky to pull that off.
I don't think The Sopranos ever dips in quality. I think there's one episode that's maybe a dinger. This isn't a home run, but otherwise,
dinger means home run in baseball.
If you hit a dinger, that means you knocked it out of the park.
Is that more of a dinger than a grand slam? That one work?
Nope. No? Same thing again. It's more of a home run than a home run.
More of a dinger than an out-of-the-park home run, yeah.
Same dinger. It keeps meaning the same thing.
Just want to say dinger. I don't know.
Maybe like a...
Say it wasn't a dinger. Maybe it wasn't a dinger. Say, it was a double or a triple, not quite a dinger.
There's no way that there isn't a... I guess it was a decent episode otherwise.
You're saying that the worst episode of The Sopranos was still a perfect episode of television, just not as perfect as the other episodes?
Yes.
Perfection is subjective. Yeah. No, I don't know. Having watched a lot of TV shows and not finished The Sopranos, there's some of the shows like Band of Brothers, Chernobyl, like it's pretty much perfect TV, you know, mm-hmm. like there's just no downbeats. And like Andrew said, it's just long movies that are perfectly executed. So it's hard to compare one to one. Yeah. Like a series that ran for a lot of years and had to constantly keep up all these characters. Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones before it died. There's definitely a time there where Game of Thrones had cemented itself. And then that cement just got doused with acid and slowly broke down until the cement was gone.
And it became gravel. Weird.
Yeah. No, it's like if it's impossible, but yeah, like Patrick Mahomes has already cemented himself as a Hall of Famer. It's like if all of a sudden Patrick Mahomes became the worst football player who has ever lived. I don't think it's even possible, because I think he would still be a Hall of Famer even if he suddenly became worthless. Like,
yeah. Well, because Game of Thrones is still going to be talked about for a long time. It has its place in the conversation, not of like best shows of all time, but like biggest shows of all time. People will talk about it. It's just that now they'll talk about it negatively. If Patrick Mahomes suddenly became the worst quarterback to ever play football, he would be talked about forever. Mm-hmm. Of like, can you believe what happened to Patrick Mahomes in 2024?
Well, ending notwithstanding, I guess it does actually make sense. I feel like Game of Thrones is probably still in the Television Hall of Fame just because of its highs, you know? So yeah, I think it's the same. Like Patrick Mahomes right now is on pace to be in the conversation for greatest football player of all time. If he suddenly became the worst football player alive, he would not be in that conversation anymore. He would be a guaranteed Hall of Famer, some ridiculous highs, but no one would consider him the greatest football player of all time if at 29 years old, he suddenly became the worst football player ever to live. So
I've thought about this far more than I should. I wish I was smart and creative and talented enough to come up with a better descriptor of how badly Game of Thrones fumbled the bag at the end. But it really is just that fucking drawing of a horse. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that well, that's, is...
It's because the front half of the horse picture existed.
Yeah.
And they traced over that painting of a horse and added some of their own flair. And then someone said, now draw the back ass and the horse yourself.
Yeah,
and they said, I don't know how to draw.
Right. The artist of the front half of the horse was like, so let me describe to you the back half of a horse. And they were like, but I don't know how to draw. And he's like,
I've never seen a horse before.
But I can describe it pretty good to you. And they're like, I guess we'll do our best. And it all fell apart. They're coming. Their new show just came out, Three Body Problem, and it is very divisive. It has some praise and some jeers. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard both. Like, I've heard very good, very bad. I've never heard anyone say it's okay, even though it's probably where it is.
Yeah, I don't know. It is definitely divisive. But yeah, fucking D&D, man. Wild. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's impossible. Like, George R. R. Martin keeps not writing books. It is possible that he's backed himself into a narrative corner. And if he can't figure out how to bring a satisfying ending to the story, maybe it just didn't exist, you know? I maintain that I think it could have made sense. I think all of the stuff could have been pulled off. Like, what happened? The finale of the show could have been satisfying if it had a lot more work gone into setting up that finale. But alas. And I think it's mostly just because I saw the Mad Queen thing coming from, like, season 3. Like, when she started burning people alive with her dragons, I'm like, there's no way that's not intentional, considering her father liked to burn people alive with dragon chemicals. Like,
no, but
feels like it's pretty on the nose.
D&D don't believe in themes or allusions. Those are for elementary school book reports.
Yeah. Metaphors? Never heard of her.
I know writers who use subtext, and they're all cowards.
Yeah, leaving seeds of things that can happen is not the same as following through with a narrative. Like, you can say that, like, the Danny Mad Queen thing made sense because they alluded to it five seasons beforehand, but, like, that's not the same thing as following through with that narrative to get to that, like, conclusion.
I think most of the stuff, made sense. It just didn't get executed to a point of satisfaction at all. I think Arya's was probably the only, like, complete head scratcher. Like, why did Arya kill the Night King? There's no...
And then completely give up on her revenge quest at the last minute, not because she learned some lesson along the way, but she just...
But again, Hound said,
hey, don't do that. Yeah, right. Like,
that was just executed poorly.
They could have set it up
poorly.
Of like, hey, revenge is bad. That's a fairly easy plot point to follow through on. They just didn't until the last moment.
But that's what I say. That could have made sense. Her killing the Night King, I don't know how that makes
no,
sense.
No, it doesn't.
Be honest with you.
It's like that decision is written by... It's as though it's written by people who talk about power levels in anime. Or like, I don't know, the... Like the death battle people, which was also getting shut down with Rooster Teeth, who were like analyze, oh, well, we look at all these character skill sets and abilities and like, how they would interact with each other. Arya is really the only one capable of like doing this. And it's like, sure. Does that make sense thematically, though? Is there any kind of pathos to any of this? Or is it just... cool looking people and special effects interacting with each other on a screen?
Like, there's plenty of people in that show that, you know, had been shown with the ability to fight well in some way or another. That, like, a fucking Brienne had a Valyrian steel sword. If she came face to face with the Night King, maybe she'd get the right slash in. Who fucking knows? Right. It wouldn't have made sense.
We've had people kill White Walkers in the show before. There's no indication that the Night King is a better fighter
Mara than a regular killed a White Walker. Samwell Tarly killed a White Walker.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's nothing in the text that suggests that the Night King is some like super god who's like indestructible.
He was just
in comparison to a regular.
One.
Yeah, exactly. He's probably, if anything, a worse fighter. He doesn't fight. He walks around and makes things cold. Like
he threw that spear that one time.
Most of the time, he has random dudes doing his fighting. He's got Spearman and other nameless White Walkers doing the fighting for him. So I have to imagine he's at most about the same as them. So yeah, it could have been anyone. Like,
I weird he was on the front lines, to be honest.
Well, it was the whole thing with the three-eyed raven. Like, and again, there's parts that I think made sense were not executed properly. Like, that three-eyed raven is like the antithesis of him, blah, 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 blah. He's gotta be there to kill him, blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah, whatever. It's all bullshit. Dragon could have melted him. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
You're a writer. Anything can happen. You're not constrained by anything. It is fully up to you what you want to portray on screen.
Andrew, what are you checking out?
Jade and I just started watching Shogun. We're also about halfway through Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And I like both so far. One episode in, Shogun's very interesting. Definitely like excited to watch the rest of it. I mean, like, we just watched episode one like the other night. Mr. and Mrs. Smith is a weird show that I like. Jay doesn't like it as much. It has like it feels so odd, and like it has all like the show is mostly made out of these really quiet moments where these two actors like have like strange but very relatable conversations, and it's written super well and interesting. But like, it's a show about how they then like go out and do these weird missions and kill people, but then like navigate their relationship with each other while doing so. But like the cognitive dissonance of like what's going on versus what they're talking about is jarring in a way that feels very intentional and well done, but it still makes you feel very weird every time you watch the show. And then I finally watched Palm Springs and Prey, two very different sci-fi movies. I had a fun time watching.
That I advocated for.
Yeah, Prey was a good time. Prey was good. cool watching, you know, like these Comanche actors speak their own language a lot of the time. And it was a new take on like the Predator movie, which was fun. And then like Palm Springs is just, it was really good. Like having like the entire plot of the movie spoiled for me did not make me enjoy that movie less.
God, you're sounding like Lucas.
Hey, it's a time loop movie. You know the structure of a time loop movie. It's how they put their own spin on it. It's either the performances are enjoyable, the actors are appreciated. Yeah.
Like 24 hours after watching that movie, I was like trying to go to bed and then I like shot up awake. I was like, they just fucking left Roy there.
Roy wanted to stay.
Yeah.
I feel like if they gave him the option, he might say, yeah, I'm down.
Didn't they give him directions?
Did you see the post credit?
No. Oh, there was post credits?
Yeah,
oh,
they leave him a voicemail and it's like, hey, when you want out, here's how you get out.
Yeah.
And he just like says no. Or
no, we don't know. But yeah, it's assumed that you know, if he ever wants to leave, he can now. But he had come to a place of acceptance where he's just like, oh, this is actually a pretty good day for me.
I get to.
And yeah, maybe I want to stay here for a while. And there's no reason to keep hunting Andy Samberg's character like an animal. Oh, man. I always love, that's my favorite part of time loop movies, is when they try to calculate how long they're in the loop. And I feel like Palm Springs just gives the biggest middle finger to that group, where they're just like, you're not finding out. He doesn't remember he has a job. Like, he doesn't remember he has a dog. Like, it's all...
I thought it was really funny at the end where he's like, yeah, my dog, Fred. And he's like, oh, you remembered that, but not anything about your life beforehand? He's like, my dog's the neighbor. He's one of those shaggy dogs. Like, he knows he has a dog, but it's like still really fuzzy.
Yeah.
I liked that they started the movie with him already in the loop.
And that is fun.
That's didn't show him falling into the loop and then like finding his way around it. Like he's done this a lot.
Right. I feel like that sets the tone, right? Like the fact that we're joining mid, like, what do they call that? When you're just out for pleasure, hedonism, mid hedonism, no holds barred. Just like, this is the story we're about to tell.
Listen, Andy Samberg definitely fucked that dad.
Oh yeah. Hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Talking about every single person at that party has had sex with Andy Samberg at some point.
He's like, oh, we've had sex thousands of times. Like that. He's had sex with a lot of people an infinite number of times.
Yeah. Really anyone within 12 hours of driving distance. Yeah.
The only thing keeping Andy Samberg like human and sentient is the fact that like he wakes up every day surrounded by people that he knows, and it like probably kind of grounds him to being who, like, that guy with that name and that personality kind of. But I find it very strange that like he still started that one loop. I mean, like, yeah, let's have weird dispassionate sex and I'm gonna like frustratingly jerk off. It was weird
because he wants to punish himself. He on some level he is like, he feels bad about his existence.
Yeah, part of that grounding process. Have just a regular bad day every once in a while.
You're liking Shogun? I don't have a ton of interest in watching that, but like I've heard a lot of people be like, no, pretty good.
Yeah, you might like it. It's good.
How grounded is it, or how playing in like samurai fiction is it? Like, is it? Do samurais suck? I guess is what I'm asking in the show.
Samurais do suck.
Oh, okay, thank God.
Most of them are huge pieces of shit.
Yeah, as they were.
But, you know, then there's, you know, there's a couple of guys who are like, no, these are the classic honorable samurai who live by the code and are just nice guys and care. Although that one guy does still order one of his subjects to kill himself and his infant son because he embarrassed him.
Samurai shit.
Yeah, samurai, not very not cool samurai shit. It's also told through the lens of like a white, or it's not told specifically through his lens, but one of the main plot points of the show is that Portugal and Catholics are the only ones in Europe that really know how to get to Japan, and they've set up a blockade so that no one else can go there and establish trade. And the Japanese do not like the Portuguese or the Catholics, but they do tolerate them for trade.
Right.
And the English are trying to find a way into Japan, and some of the samurai, when they find this group of English sailors that like basically wash up like near death, are trying to like find a way to use them to their advantage to like maybe, you know, set up ways for them to get more power by like establishing a new like system of trade and guns and stuff in their fief in Japan, like to prepare for the coming war that they know is on its way. So like that's interesting. I don't really need these English pirates to be in the show. Like, I don't really care about William Blackthorne, who's definitely a main character, and he's kind of more of a MacGuffin,
okay.
I'll be honest, but like he's not interesting, at least so far.
All right, that's all very good to know. And maybe, I don't know, maybe this will be a Game of Thrones thing for me too, where if it sticks to landing, I'll check it out.
Stop waiting till the end. Give it a chance. You can decide for yourself to stop watching something.
You just are permanently scarred.
You're going to wait
longer
20...
watch ongoing series.
You're going to pull a Sopranos, and you're not going to watch anything until it's been out for 20 years and it's stood the test of time and does not fail to hold up to modern lenses.
I mean, in fairness, I was 4 when the first season of The Sopranos came out, but maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, you had such a positive experience with The Sopranos that now you're going to do it with every show.
I mean, I am a little terrified to check out another show now because it will always be the show I watched after I watched The Sopranos. I'll probably like The Bear.
You will probably like The Bear.
If they get anything wrong about living in Chicago, I will point that out repeatedly and loudly. But other than that,
feels like Chicagoans really enjoy the show.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you're good there.
As a former one of those, I hope I do too. But that'll just about do it for episode 247 of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast, likely titled, I Just Want to Say Dinger. I don't know. If you like what you heard, like, comment, subscribe, etc. Check us out on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok highlight clips. Actually linked in the description. Support us on Patreon and join the likes of the terrific Tiffany Cole and Sucky Badger. Follow us on Twitter at V2_podcast. Follow me, Lucas the Writer, not on Twitter, on Blue Sky. Get off of Twitter, people. You can just do that. You can just do that anytime. And Blue Sky is a pretty okay alternative that I've found. I enjoy it. I enjoy being there. Okay. Thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of your week. Goodbye.